Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hello to you. I speak to you from Sunday morning. This is the third time I've tried to record this. The first time was yesterday, and I was very happy chatting away to you about this week's guest and all the things I've been up to recently, and then two of the kids started having a fight, so I had to stop what I was doing. And just now, I was very happily chatting to you about everything. And then one of my kids got very cross that I wasn't playing with him, which is fair enough, I hear you say. But, you know, I did all the classic stuff. I acknowledged him. I said, give me 2 minutes. It wasn't enough. So now he's happy, and I'm going to try this again. And it's a Sunday morning, as I said. The sun is shining. I'm in the middle of a massive clear out of a cupboard. We have a cupboard under the stairs that keeps all our coats and shoes. And I've pulled everything out, which at first felt wonderful, and now is in that horrible bit where you've actually just got to keep going with the job that you're now not feeling quite as enthusiastic about. But I have found stuff in there I don't need. So there's a nice little pile of things building for the charity shop, and all good. And what else have I done this weekend? It's been pretty mixed. Lots of fun. Yesterday I sang at the Twickenham Rugby England-Ireland women's match, and I took along Jessie and Mickey, so my little two, and they were absolutely loving it because it's such a spectacle. Very family friendly. Lots of fun stuff happening. There's a DJ, there's pyrotechnics and fireworks and people dressed with disco balls on their heads doing dances, and it was actually really cute. And I sang at the half time, the break, and I only had 10 minutes, but I managed to squish in little bits of a few things, and it was actually really good fun. Everybody was dancing away, so that was lovely for me. And then, buoyed with that lovely feeling, I came home and played some Playmobil and changed a loo seat. So, you know, a successful day all round. And today, I'm going to have quite a lazy day. We're going to go and see Kung Fu Panda in a minute. And that's kind of all I've got planned, really. I just want to do the cupboards, be chill, very relaxed day. Everybody's feeling all a bit, you know, new term at school, back to school, a little bit tired around the edges. So if you have small people, I hope they've started their new terms okay. We've had 2 of my kids start a new school as well, halfway through a year, which isn't the easiest. But they're actually handling it all right, I think, she says optimistically 3 days in. And this week's guest. So I
have been wanting to speak to Michelle Gunderson on the podcast for a little while because, well, as you've probably worked out by now, it's an excuse for me to get in touch with people I admire. So I think she's got such a good eye. Her eye of how she views architecture, interiors, colours, so well-honed, so tasteful. So I first became aware of Michelle's work when she was editor-in-chief of Elle Decoration, which is a beautiful interiors magazine, and I was getting it on subscription for probably about 15 years. So I had a very impressive pile of Elle Decorations that I never, ever would throw away. And then eventually I kind of went through and cherry-picked some of my favourite bits and then did have to say bye because it was taking up so much room and they were so heavy. But it was all Michelle's world that I was entering because as editor-in-chief, she would visit lots of different homes and I just love seeing what people have done with their houses, and every month I'd see something that would inspire me and I'd think, okay, now that's how I want to do it. And actually, I've realised that I was reading it all throughout the time when I was finding my feet with regard to, like, the home I wanted to have for myself. So I think I first started reading it when I was in my early 20s and going through different flats and different rentals and different rooms and different buildings and just experimenting with what you can do inside your, after, you know, once you get through your front door, that makes home feel the way you want it to. I do still love all of that. Houses evolve as well, don't they? They're like breathing things, you know, they kind of need to move with you. That's probably why, partly why I'm in the middle of a clear out, actually. Anyway, subsequent to the Elle Decoration, I would watch Michelle as head judge on what was the Great British Interior Design Challenge and is now Interior Design Masters. Interior Design Masters is hosted by Alan Carr. It sees a group of young amateur interior designers being given different spaces to transform. And I find it really addictive and so impressive how people think. I can do wall colourings and soft furnishings and that kind of thing. Actual sort of reimagining space and furniture and form and function like that, I don't think that's my skill set. And Michelle is so good because she's very articulate. She's very nuanced in her responses to places. And always, even when people are leaving the competition, she always makes them feel valued and that they can really appreciate how far they've come and what the competition has given to them, which I always think is such a thoughtful and kind way to treat people going through that kind of experience. And following Michelle on Instagram, she also does lots of stuff on her lifestyle, on holistic stuff. So she's now training and doing a food nutrition course, and she's going to be a nutritionist as well as someone who looks at how your home environment and environment affects your mental health. Anyway, it was a lovely conversation with her. I think she's incredibly wise, and she also, when she came to record here, she brought along her little boy who was a complete delight. And yeah, so just pure pleasure, all the good stuff. And look, I didn't get interrupted. Hurrah! I've managed to do my intro. See you on the other side. Firstly, it's really nice to see you.
Oh, lovely to see you too.
And I'm happy because I brought you to my home, and it's a little bit of, not pressure exactly, but just an awareness that you're someone that's going to be taking in all the detail.
No, but I appreciate the intimacy of that, because I know, like, when your home is, it's such a personal space. It is, you don't want to be judged, do you? You don't want someone to go, oh, well, it was a bit like this. But I mean, often people have joked to me, it's like, well, you can't come around. It's like, I don't walk into people's homes and judge it. It's just, it's such a glorious expression of the person, and you take the person as the person, and it's just, but it is just fabulous. I could spend hours here just having a look at everything, because I know
the expression of the person.
Absolutely. But I bet every single thing in here has got meaning for you, hasn't it?
So it's, I do like
the
storytelling,
story of your life here.
I do like
that. It's beautiful.
And I do think it's interesting because everybody's got such a different relationship with their stuff and their home.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a couple of ways I came to know about you. Initially, I think it was through my subscription to Elle Decoration, because I was a subscriber to that from, I think, for about 10 years.
Wow, so.
All through your tenure, though. So you started in the late 90s, I believe. Was it 97 or 98?
Well, editing from 2004,
okay.
I'm thinking vaguely, and then finished 2017.
Yeah, I would have had pretty much every single month of that stack by my bed.
Oh, wow.
And I just loved delving into the pages of it so much. And I would always see your note at the beginning of the issue and just sort of drink in the whole idea. It was so indulgent to me to open this whole world in these pages. But then latterly, through watching the great British Interior Design Challenge and now known as Interior Design Masters, which I absolutely adore and was happily enough invited to be a guest judge on.
I know, I'm so thrilled that you were able to do that. I really was, because I know that we sort of connected early in the sort of, and I wasn't able to kind of join you on something. And then I loved being able to, was it maybe about a year later, going,
yes,
hey, actually, can I offer you a counter offer? Like,
yes,
please, will you come and do this with me? Because I wanted to meet you.
Yeah, so good. And I loved it. And I think you are so brilliant on that program because you're so wise, articulate and experienced, but also so encouraging with all of the people starting their journeys. But the other thing, as I've sort of gone through the layers of all the stuff you've done in your book and stuff, I feel like you've really given gravitas to something that I think, because I've always loved creating a world in my home. I love that feeling. And I grew up in a house like that. But I felt like it's always been treated as a sort of aside. Like if you know, if you like colour, if you want to put your personality in your home, it's like, well, that's nice for you. But I've realised the significance of environment. And
yes,
I love the fact you sort of elevated it to be, and it's so logical really when you step back from it, to be such an integral part of what makes us tick. So why don't we talk a little bit about that and your relationship with, I suppose it's broader than interiors, isn't it? It's environment, isn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah, if we think about what surrounds us affects us, and I love, and I agree, well, I'll go back a step. I think it is that people think, well, you have to be creative to, you know, to make your home kind of look lovely. And so it's not fundamental. It could be perceived as a bit fickle because it's like, well, it's just paint and cushions, isn't it? And if you have time, you can do that. And I think one of my things is, when we talk about well-being, we cheerily mention food, nutrition, exercise, the importance of sleep, but we very seldom talk about what surrounds us, our environment, and arguably your home is like, it's where it all comes together. And so that was always my thing. It's like, if we want to talk properly about well-being, we've got to talk about the spaces that we live in. Because also, I think there's like stats say that we spend 90% of our time indoors. And then you think through the pandemic, I think suddenly the penny dropped for people because lots of people were talking about being stuck indoors. And it was like, therein lies the problem. Because for me, my home is my favourite place to be in the whole world. Like, it's hard push to get me out of it. So, you know, well done. I have tracked from Kent to the furthest reaches of London, as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, my mission is to help people create environments in which to thrive and to understand that it's really, really important and it does make a difference. So like when I'm looking around, you know, in your living room now, you've surrounded yourself with your story, which is so reinforcing and so empowering because it's also telling me that you know who you are. And so to return to a space like that every time that you go out into the world, and the world can be hard and difficult and busy and annoying, but to come back to a space and go, oh, okay, I know who I am. Because I think many of the problems that people have in life is because either they don't know who they are or they don't feel accepted for who they are. So your home is a space where you can like create that security.
That's so true. And just to sort of, you've arrived, your little boy, just turned 10. How have you found helping him create a story in his space? Or is it something where, did that come naturally to let him have his own space
to
shape?
I think kids just do it intuitively. And there, you've just got to let go. You've just got to let go and let them do it. I mean, there are things where it's like, could we pick up things at the end of the day? Could we, you know, and I will love to colour coordinate his Lego.
Oh, wow.
It's like, it's easier to find the pieces if you're trying to, rather than like delving through a multicoloured box.
But so you've got like drawers with it all in
No,
colours.
We've got, you know, when you buy those like fat balls for the birds, they come in kind of tubs usually.
Yeah.
So we use those tubs.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Quite nice because they've got lids as well, so you can stack them, which is quite nice.
Ah.
But and books, you know, for me, I like to arrange them by type. So there's all his like sort of computery, nerdy, Pokemon-y books together, and then all the story books together. But I mean, he just pulls them out and they're going everywhere. But he likes to cover the walls, and it's just like, it's your space. So I do think that's one thing. The thing that makes me super sad is when someone has done a beautiful home and they've done their colour scheme and then they've extended it into the kids' room. So you see these lovely neutral beige rooms. It's like, no. No child ever picks beige as their background colour.
Yes.
It's like, just let them do it. And it's, you know, they have so little autonomy day to day. I think it's the beginning of allowing them to be who they want to be.
So true. I remember moving house when I was having my second baby and looking around this house, and the kids' room in the house I was looking in was right at the top, all black, no toys. I was like, this is telling me things. Sort of, it was like it was screaming at me, this room. Like, it was so sad and weird.
Yeah. No, that's
I'd forgotten
strange.
All about that, but it was a bit strange. But do you think some of our relationship with environment is cultural as well? Because when you were talking, I realised that there are some countries where I think they've got they're much more at ease with their aesthetic language.
Yes, that's true. I mean, I suppose, you know, if we think Scandi, we immediately think all pared back, big windows, birchwood furniture, and very minimal. And that is their cultural heritage. But they'll be hoarders in Scandinavia. Mm. But and then if we think of like our history, it's the brown wood Victorian furniture, probably a bit claustrophobic and cluttered. I mean, that's the cliche, but that's also our housing stock.
Yes.
But then you see what people have done with the sort of side return and knocking down the back and adding extensions. But then often I think the pursuit is correct. They want more light and space, but that often means that the front room then gets completely neglected.
Yeah.
So it's actually, I often say to people, you don't need more space, you need less stuff.
Yes.
Because we tend to, you know, hold on to stuff. And yet I think one of the great things about moving is it forces you to reevaluate and to just let go. Sometimes there's just such liberation and letting go. But it's interesting because I say this as someone that's sort of in the process of moving. I'm completely committed to it yet. We have moved to a new house, but I wanted to travel really lightly. So I took the main pieces of furniture because I was leaving some things in the old house. And what was interesting to me is all my little knickknacks, tchotchkes, things, whatever, I left them all behind.
Wow.
Because one, because the new place doesn't have shelves
right.
or windowsills or mantelpieces or anything. But I found it quite easy to leave them. And then we've been back twice and there were a few little things. I'm like, actually, this is super precious to me. This I want. But I'm amazed that so much of it, I was just like, yeah, fine, can stay here. So I don't know yet what I'm going to do with that stuff, whether I box it and stick it somewhere, which goes against my kind of like, no, if you're not going to have it out on display, you shouldn't have it. But then equally, I'm thinking like one of my favourite things in my son's room, and something we moved wholesale, is he has these two little shelves. I'm waving my arms around here. I think they were originally CD shelves. Mm-hmm. So they're about a metre high and each one's a metre wide. So they've got lots of little compartments all open, absolutely stuffed with all his little bits and pieces. And so it's like his dual curiosity shelves. And sometimes when he's at school, I will just sit and just look at it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, wow, this is him. This is what he's into. And so the beautiful thing for him when we moved is arranging, taking everything out of the boxes and putting it all back.
Yeah.
And once he'd done that, he was like, okay, I moved now.
That's interesting, though, about you leaving a lot of things. I actually can kind of relate to that. And my eldest, he has got, on the surface of it, a similar relationship to his things as me. So in his bedroom when he was living at home, there were things everywhere, little things, some things from when he was really small, some things added later. But when he moved, he took about three things and everything else stayed.
I think it's maybe because you're stepping in. When you do a big move like that, maybe it's almost like you're stepping into a new skin.
Yeah.
So you shed somehow. And for me, this our move is very much that. It's stepping into a life that I've dreamt about and thought about and planned for and finally done. And I just suddenly realised, oh, but it surprises me because like you, all my things have a story.
Yes.
But then equally, like, I mean, this will probably give me like, oh my God, it's a very insight into me, is over the last probably 5 years, I've been doing something called my albuming project, which is basically, I have these albums. They're just from like the Tiger stationery, I think about A3 size, about this thick. They're scrapbooks, but I have archived my entire life.
Tell me more about that.
All the, like, you know, my tear sheets, my school reports, like love letters, cards, all the stuff that you keep.
Wow.
But the thing is, I used to keep it all separate. So there was like, you know, personal stuff here, work stuff there, other stuff, all very compartmentalised. And so I think the process for me, just in my stepping into a new skin, was actually bringing it all together.
That's fascinating.
But it's just, but when I was doing it, there are bits that I was like, oh my God, Michelle. So, for example, when I was editing the magazine, I only by looking through all the sort of history documents, I realised that I'd had a miscarriage, been hospitalised and was on a plane to Milan the next day. Because the diary, the work diary, was separate and the medical things were here. And it was like, I had to look at it and look at it and go, seriously? Like, what the heck? What on earth? Why did you do that? And it was only by bringing this stuff together. It's been this real process for me of actually, I think actually fully integrating myself. Because you know, yeah, with certain jobs, it's a front, isn't it? You have, yes, this polished, wonderful persona. You're not allowed to have dents in you. You're not allowed to have bad days. You can't turn up to a concert and be like, actually, I've got a bit of a headache today. You have to take the anodyne and get on with it.
Absolutely.
And yet we realise to fully become ourselves and be authentic and be truthful, you have to actually go, I mean, for God's sake, go, actually, I was in hospital yesterday, so I need to change that flight and not worry that you're going to lose your job. But it wouldn't have occurred to me to do it. And I think, yeah, that's what, but it was only by doing this albuming that I've just, and it was so fascinating. I mean, slightly, I think, weird slash scary slash eye-opening that I wasn't aware of this stuff until I did it. But I, yeah, think that was my process. And then, yeah, I finished it at last year, the end of last year, because I was like, I can't keep doing this because I am literally living in the past, because I'm like, oh, a rainy day, let me do 1999, you know, but it's there and I've got it all in a big row on the floor of my new study and it's like, okay. But I almost feel I could almost throw it all away now. Do you know what I mean?
Like it's a process.
It's almost.
And you looked back at it all. And I mean, sort of armchair psychologists would, and me would say that maybe at the time the separation was completely vital to just
survival.
Yes, exactly. And the rawness and sadness of something like a miscarriage that means you know, when you're in hospital as well. Mm. And then the next day, work as normal, on the plane, off you go. Probably at that time that just felt like what you needed to be getting on with. And it's not even maybe thinking through about losing your job, although obviously that's, you know, fact, but maybe just people interacting with you in a completely day-to-day way.
Yeah, yeah. Because you didn't share the personal. The last thing you would have said is like, oh, well, actually, because also you don't want to declare that you're actually trying to get pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, not at that level.
So well, you know, the only reaction they're going to give is a sad yeah, reaction to that. Then no one, that's the only possible response would be, I'm so sorry that happened to you.
Yeah. And which then unlocks that, yeah, thing. So then there you are having tears in the office type thing. And exactly. So you don't want to have any option that could happen. But I mean, I find it fascinating. I find it fascinating to look back and because you see your evolution.
Yes. And I suppose this is like, you know, we evolve and we grow, and it feels like you're very good at keeping an eye on yourself doing that. It's almost like you've got an idea of, like, almost a conscious idea of that. Sometimes these things happen a bit more like you reflect, oh, actually, I've realised by doing that process, but by actually archiving, that's a very conscious,
yes,
way of looking at yourself and seeing the journey and all the things that were running, yeah, concurrently. Yeah.
I think I'm very, now, it is very important to me to act very consciously and to be aware, because I'll often, maybe I'll feel something and I can't quite articulate it. And so I'll make sure that I sit with that and go, okay, what's this telling me? Or like what your body's telling you. And being aware of the patterns that we have and that we inherit that sometimes maybe are not very good for you. I mean, for example, I mean, we mentioned it briefly before, you know, that I've just moved. And so I've, you know, as a single parent as well, I've packed up the house, I've found a new school, I found the new house, I've, you know, sorted out the uniform, I've organised the move, we've unpacked, everything was done, because you just get on with it. Mm. You know, and I think as women as well, you just get on with stuff. And I wouldn't have told you that I felt stressed. You know, people said, oh, how's it going? You know, it's supposed to be the most stressful thing. I'm like, well, no, it's good, we're fine, we're done, I'm all unpacked. But then 5 days later, my skin just went bleh. And I was just like exhausted, and then feeling like, why am I exhausted? I've just done this amazing thing. I'm not stressed. And it's like, I think maybe you are. You know, this is how your body tells you that you need to slow down.
Yeah.
Take a min and just relax, you know? I think it's not for nothing that I have a basset hound as my dog, because I look at him and go, I need to be more basset. Okay. Just chill. Okay. So it's, you know, so I've learnt to try and understand myself in order to protect myself. And I think that also ties into being a single mum. It's like it drives my interest in well-being, in nutrition, because like I need to stay alive because, you know, my child needs me. So there's that too, which is maybe a pressure, but it's also a motivation.
No, I think that's lovely. And I like the fact that all of it's so conscious. I actually think that's a very brave way to live. And I say brave because I think there's a lot of things when you turn the spotlight on yourself. Like even you said something that you're finding uncomfortable or difficult, and actually just sitting with that rather than what most people do, which is just trying to distract yourself away from it as quickly as possible. I feel like there's a lot of wisdom in that. Is that something that you've always had the ability to do, or has come?
Oh gosh, no. I would say I'm someone that's absolutely learned all my lessons the hard way by doing it wrong and going, well, that wasn't very a good idea, was it? So I've thrown myself off the parapet and jumped off the bridges, and then I don't seem to have had the ability to just look. You know, you all have those friends that go, well, I wouldn't do that if I were you because I can see that that's not a good idea. And I'd be like, well, how do you know? You haven't tried it. You have to try it, don't you? And then you're halfway through and go, yeah, okay, you were right. Can help, please. Can you get me out of here? So I've had to live it all. But that has sometimes had a bit of a toll. So I think now I'm trying to be slightly more of that person that goes, well, are you sure? So it's taken me 3 years to decide to move, but then I've done all the research. But then equally, one of the other things I realised recently is like sometimes just make the decision. Just do it.
What were you looking for when you were moving? What was your
space, privacy, not space, physical space, space above my head, privacy. You know, as the show has got bigger, I've struggled to deal with losing just being anonymous. And I would describe myself as a complete introvert. I love to write. I like to, you know, potter around. I'm a bit of a scruff. and finding yourself in Tesco's with someone coming up to you, and they're always very nice. Just, I really, really found this hard to start off with, because it was almost like that, gone back to that compartmentalising again, that it put me into a different place, and I'd be thinking, oh, I'm just here in Tesco's being me, and you are looking at me as this other person, because I sort of saw that as a slightly different persona, because, you know, she has professional hair and makeup. I mean, she looks lovely. I mean, her skin never breaks out. And it's sort of like that thing of like, that's still you. So I've had to learn that. So we're like, what, 5 seasons in? And I'm more comfortable with it now, but I realised I had to do something for myself. And so where I was living, people knew where I lived, and I felt too exposed. You know, when you're putting the bins out, you're slightly like, seriously? Like, yay, that's nice, but I just want to put the bins out, and I am actually wearing my pyjamas, so, you know. But so that's all been... I've forgotten what your original question was.
What you were looking for when you moved.
Ah,
really.
I see, yeah, so there was, desiring, like, space around me, privacy, but also I really... Do you remember the sitcom The Good Life?
Yeah.
Okay, and so you have Margot and Barbara, and I think... Well, back a step again. I think one of the interesting things about TV is lots of people, that's where they meet you for the first time. So people think, that's all of me. Mm-hmm. That's all I do. I'm only allowed to talk about cushions and colours, and I'm a TV judge, and I always look that nice with my hair done. So that's maybe they think I'm a bit Margot. But actually, I'm Barbara. I crave and want to be Barbara. I want to be off-grid. I want to grow my own vegetables. I want to make my own vodka or whatever. I love that. And that is actually the core of me. So I needed to be able to do that. And I couldn't do that in my current place. So my dream is a completely off-grid homestead. But it's also tied into the wanting to teach. So I wanted enough space that I could have people come. And it's like, because I'm so passionate about the whole like happy inside way, it's like, I need you to come, stay here for 2 days and feel it. Tell me that you sleep better like this. Tell me what you feel like when you're surrounded in a non-toxic environment.
And so the teaching is to do with interiors or architecture or holistically?
All of it, I suppose. Everything. The understanding kind of what we would saying at the top of our conversation that what surrounds you affects you. So, you know, I hear people saying, oh God, I sleep terribly. And then you think, well, talk to me about what's your bedroom like? You know, what do you actually surround yourself with? What do you do before you go to bed? When do you have your last meal? All these things are interrelated.
Yeah.
And so it's to try and help people to really understand that and to understand that there are these little shifts that you can do that you might think, oh, that's not going to affect me, but they will. And they add up. And it's the same as sort of thinking that some of the things that I point out, say, in my books, is that I say, well, these are toxic. Like, each one individually isn't going to slay you and you'd be dead in 2 minutes. But you start adding them up. And then this is what I talk about then, the toxic load, that you're just making your whole body work so much harder.
Yeah.
And life is already hard. So a lot of what I want to try and teach and share is, like, let's just stack the odds in your favour. Let's just help you to help yourself. And let's not forget that the foundation of all of this is where you're coming back to every night, where you start and finish every day.
Yeah, because sometimes it's such an afterthought. Actually, particularly bedrooms, weirdly.
Yes.
Because you think a lot about your living environment, where you know, your kitchen and your sitting room, maybe, because you're...
Well, they're the feeling, public spaces.
Yes, yeah. Public, and also I think you're kind of quite fresh and in a maybe more of a doing mode.
Yeah, yeah.
And then bedroom, like my bedroom is probably given about a quarter of the love, I think.
Oh, wow. So I would always like start with the bedroom.
Yes.
Because how you sleep, is again, it underpins kind of everything. And it will give you the energy, because bottom line is, like, you want to live. You want to live your life. You want to feel energized and positive and vibrant. Definitely. And all that stuff. And yet we do just tend to think, well, what are you eating? Are you exercising? It's like, no, please, let's come back to the foundation of it all.
Yeah, so true.
So that's it. I want interiors to come off the back pages of the newspapers and into the front pages.
Yeah, well, I think that's wonderful. And when we talk about it, I feel like it's such a, as I said before, logical.
Yeah.
But it's just a shift in mindset. And, you know, I know that there's science to back up all of this stuff as well, if that's what's needed, even though we all have our inherent responses to environments all the time, to everything.
No, that's beautifully put, because I think there's a lot of, certainly when I was writing the first book, it's like it's based largely on my intuitive knowledge. And some of the responses was like, well, where's the science? And it's like, well, the science is there. It's catching up. So with the one that I'm working on now, it's like, well, I'm putting the science in then. If that's what it takes to convince you, then fine, I'll put it in. But trust me, this stuff, it matters.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And if we can go with your these amazing albums you've been doing.
The obsession.
I know. I think you have to keep them at the end when you said you might get rid of them. I think you put them somewhere because they sound like something that might be like, you know, some might like reflecting.
Oh, no, he tortures me about it. Says, yeah, the minute you die, Mummy, I'm getting rid of them. Thanks for the laugh, yeah. Because he's seen me. It's like, you're going to album this, aren't you? Like, it's
really?
The refrain.
Okay.
Like, he'll do a little drawing. I'm like, oh, that's so lovely. It's like, you can't album it. It's like, but I'm keeping it safe. So it's become a bit of a joke between us now. Because now, obviously, I'm in the current day.
Yes.
So everything, I'm like, ooh, can I put the train ticket in? It's like...
I'm actually really impressed you've managed to keep it going. As it feels like the sort of project, I would buy the books from Tiger. I'd be sat there and then it'd be like... I'd do it for a little bit and then it would just sit on a side.
No, it literally became an obsession. Like, we'd go on holiday and I would take a year. Because the first thing was, because I had all this
stuff. How do you
remember
what year everything happened?
Well, some of it's got it dated.
Okay.
There's now like one random box left where it is literally like, I'm like scanning it and sending it to my sisters and going, do you remember when this picture was taken? They're like, oh God, she's still albuming. And some things I'm like, I could just throw it away, please, just throw it away.
Yeah.
Because you don't know when this happened. But most things have got dates on them. But the first thing I did was like get all the random boxes of everything and I put it all in chronological order.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was able to go, right, I am literally going to do 2001. And I take all of that stuff. And it was kind of fascinating. But there were definitely points when I was like, I'm really, really bored of doing this now. I need it done. I want to throw the stuff away, but I can't. I feel compelled to just keep going. And I suppose it's because it had an end. It was like, just keep going, you know. But it's also fascinating because there's like tear sheets from magazines. So the people that I was into.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like I find Gwyneth Paltrow deeply fascinating. And I've got really early interviews with her from like the very first movies. And then I've got the latest one. So it's like almost the people that I was interested in have stayed quite constant too.
Well, what are you interested in about her? Just her lifestyle?
Yeah, just I find her just intriguing.
Mm.
You know, what the path that she's taken and the whole Goop thing and the phenomena and that, like, you know, extreme wellness. But then how she's managed it and how she's now like, hey, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And you just think, yeah, well, why should you? You're like multi-blimmin' millionaire, perfectly happy, lovely husband, beautiful children. You know, it's like, I find it how she seemingly, because obviously I'm not in her world, deals with it. It just seems to me very kind of holistic and wholesome. And she, just that joy of like, she knows who she is.
Well, when I interview her on Spinning Plates, I'll ask her your questions.
Yes.
Hasn't happened yet. She would be a great guest.
She does have a plate room, though. I think I did a piece with the Daily Mail on that, that Gwyneth Paltrow has a plate room. It's like a big sort of armoire like you have here, but just with very specific plates on. Just like, okay, that's quite specific.
Wow.
I think she's a Scorpio as well, though, see, and I'm fascinated by Scorpios as one.
Okay. I don't know much about star signs.
What are you?
I'm an Aries.
Ah,
same as your boy.
Yes,
yeah,
my boy. Of course you are. You just
had
your birthday.
April.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're... Apparently I have Aries rising, so I present as one, but then I'm not, because then I get scared and go, I don't know. This is too much. But no, Aries is a wonderful sign. You're the first... I don't know loads about it. I used to look into it and then I was like, oh, don't be ridiculous, and stopped. But I do always love to know, because I think, you know how sometimes you just intuitively click with people?
Yes,
but
I
equally
can see
other
that.
People you just kind of don't.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, could be this, could be that. But there's so many other things that affect personality and character. But why not?
Yeah, why not?
Why not the pull of the, you know, the planets that pull the oceans of the world in and out?
Yeah. I mean, I'm someone that's quite cynical about it, but then I basically
but you're an
know
Aries.
So many.
Yeah,
so
you're
Aries.
Supposed to.
I know. And also, I'm surrounded by people who are Aries. I've realised absolutely surrounded.
Oh, that's like, interesting.
April is always the month where I have to keep texting people every day, like, happy birthday to you. Oh, and happy birthday to you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you've got all that lovely fiery energy. I mean, I love it as a sign. I think it's just brilliant because you just have, I mean, I just think, you know, my son couldn't be more perfect for me because he brings out of me the thing. You know, he makes me have fun. He makes me do stuff that I'm like, oh, well, I don't know. You know, like, okay, fine. I know you're right. So, yeah, ultimately, an Aries will be the best partner for me, for sure.
Well, why don't we go back to when you had him? What was happening in your world when you had your baby?
Oh, my goodness. Where to start? It's funny. Well, it's not funny. That's such a weird word to use. But... I was never someone that thought they didn't want children, absolutely not, but I thought I was ambivalent. So I was, you know, I was fulfilled, I was busy, I was having fun, I was like dating great people, and I was just living. And I figured, well, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I have two sisters who both definitely wanted children. So I was like, oh, I'm going to be the greatest auntie. Fast forward a bit, and it never seemed to happen. And then it did. I fell pregnant. And in the action of a baby growing inside me, it was the most extraordinary thing. And in that moment, I kind of realized, well, what a privilege, what an absolute privilege that if your body can do this. And I mean, sadly, I lost that baby, although it's not actually sadly, because the person I was with would have been the worst father, and he behaved terribly. So that was all awful. And the idea that I'd have to be sharing custody with him now would be just a disaster. But I think it was the universe going, are you sure? Because I was like, oh, well, I've missed the boat now. I, you know, it had gotten a bit too late. And so I do think it was an absolute blessing of being told, like, you need to decide about this. You can't keep drifting through thinking, oh, well, we'll just see what happens. You need to consciously make a decision. And I think the biggest lesson there with all life things is that you have to focus on your priorities. And I was very, I was kind of prioritized on work, but not a kind of, not in a kind of my career goes over everything, not at all like that. I was just busy and living. But, and so that then I realized it's like, if there's even the slightest chance that I could have a baby, I need to know I tried. So that started, I think it was 5 years worth of like IUI, IVF, you know, just all any which way to see if it would happen. And it seemed like I didn't have a problem getting pregnant, but I had a problem keeping the baby because simply I just left it quite late. And we know that our eggs age and stuff. So it was sort of how long you could just keep going, really. And so I think four more miscarriages later and all manner of injecting myself with this, that and the other, but I finally had my baby. But one thing that I did before that is I did something called the Hoffman process, which I don't know if you know about, but it's about examining your past and your the things that you bring with you into the present day that have maybe learned from your parents and stuff. And I think one of my big blocks was that I was scared that I'd be a bad mother because I don't think I was mothered very well. My mother was very unmaternal. And so I didn't feel like I had a good role model. And so it's like, well, how could I do this? And I think that was a bit of a block. And doing this process, and it was like a 5-day intensive course thing that you're out and they take away your phones and everything. I mean, it's major. I mean, loads of tears and bashing things and getting all this anger. I had anger inside me. And I fell pregnant like maybe 2 months after that. And I do feel it was like it opened up this opportunity for me to, I was like, I was ready now. I was able to receive him. And without sounding like a complete cliche, it was and is the absolute biggest gift, best thing that ever happened to me. And I mean, he's just turned 10, and in his little card I was just like, you know, you're the best thing that ever happened to me, because it just in that instant all your priorities shift. And I realized there was nothing I wouldn't do for him, and suddenly now I was going to work. I'm like, right, I have to leave, you know, that's it. And it just put it everything into a much more healthy kind of box. But then also just the responsibility, because I think when you choose to have children, or if you're able to have children, it is also the moment, or it should be, maybe. I don't mean that to sound judgy, but it was for me the moment when you go, it's not about me anymore. Like, it just, this is where I become selfless. And that's really hard at times, because you come so low down the pecking order sometimes, you know. But the understanding of really unconditional love was just mind-blowing to me. And then watching this person develop, you know, then he's not me, he's not a mini-me, he's a completely separate person. And he's so like his little curiosity shelves, it's like, wow, how did you get into this? Or like the words he'll use sometimes, I'm like, oh my God, you know, you're holding this being, trying to hold them so lightly, and yet at the same time you're like, please never leave home, and can I wrap you in cotton wool? And like, don't do anything dangerous ever, will you? Because I will just die a thousand deaths if anything happens to you. And it's just, it's been the hardest thing in the world, but the most joyful in every possible way. But I mean, you know, I'm sitting here looking at you. You have 5 children. I mean, you know this. You know all this stuff already.
I do, but I'm thinking, I hope I've had as much appreciation in the moment of all these things, because sometimes I think, because I had my first baby when I wasn't expecting to have one, and then it's all, I felt like I was in such a gallop.
Right.
When I had Sonny, like I absolutely marvelled at him in exactly the same way, of course, but I felt like there was just always things happening, swirling around.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I've had as much of a chance to reflect on how much it's changed me. It definitely did. I mean, the impetus of having this podcast came out of the way it knocked me for 6 in lots of ways. And, you know, really good stuff, but also just changed things. And there was, definite before and after. And some of it's the practical side of how, you know, your actual life and day-to-day changes, but also the fundamental stuff.
Yeah.
And having to sort of find myself again. But I feel like I haven't done it in a way that's quite as conscious as you. So hearing you say all that was making me beam, because I was thinking it's so beautiful to really appreciate but see it in that way. And I saw you put a post, I think it was from last year, but it was talking about how, you know, part of being a single mum has meant you've actually done a very conscious way of living in that space with him. So the relationship you guys have is wonderful. Like, my mum was a single mum with me for about 3 or 4 years when I was sort of, before I was in double digits, and it completely formed the keystone to our relationship. And I don't think I really understood that until I had a chance to reflect on it from conversations like this, really.
Yeah.
So I think lucky him, really, that you've got all that, you know, sun beating down on him. And when you said about holding him lightly, but also thinking, I'd never do any of these things, it's so true. Because they grow up and, you know, you get blown away by who these people are. There's a line, I think it's in Lost in Translation, where Bill Murray says, you have your kids and then when they grow up, they turn out to be some of the nicest people you've ever met. And I always thought that was such beautiful. A nice thing to say. Yeah. It's so true, because you sort of marvel. Every independent thought they have as well, you're like, wow, crazy. Yeah. Tell me more about that.
Yeah.
As they get older, it just gets more and more fascinating.
That's it. I mean, I think, you know, I think I only have the advantage of having that so consciously because I did it later. And because I was at that stage where, and I've seen this over and over because I've had largely female teams as well, that women feel they've had to give up something in order to have the child. And quite often they have. They physically give up their jobs, they give up their autonomy, they give up their financial independence. But I'd achieved a certain level in my work that I was like, it's fine. And so I was moving into, again, another level or layer or something of life where I didn't feel I was giving anything up, I was gaining. And I think that mentally really, really helped, because there was no sense of loss, there was only a sense of like, wow. But then also complete fear, you know, when you leave hospital and you're like, you can't just leave me looking after this human being, it's like, I might kill it. You know, like don't go anywhere. But then, you know, so every year it's like, wow, another year and I didn't kill him. We're still here.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, it's just the most extraordinary thing. I mean, I love hanging out with him completely. But I'm quite strict. He's not like my mate. He's my son.
Yeah.
I'm his mum and there are rules. And that's one of the sort of, you know, again, single parenting, there's only one way things go. So that's sort of easy. But on the other side, there's like, you do everything. So I was sort of reflecting when I was so tired after moving. It was like, actually, give yourself a break, Michelle. You have just packed the whole house. You've moved him. You found a new school. You got sorted out the car. Something went wrong with that. And you've done all of this stuff and you're cooking all the meals. Because I don't know about you, but it's the cooking that actually stresses me out. When he's like, what's for tea?
Comes around so quick as well,
They're always hungry as well, aren't they?
Always.
So you're just like, I don't know what's for tea. I haven't been, in fact, I don't even know where the supermarket is yet. So it's just like, just can you have a biscuit? You know? But I just don't want to take anything for granted anymore. But I can say that because in my 20s, 30s, I mean, God, I just did everything, you know. I've we've done it all. I've travelled, I've done that, I've drunk the drunks. I've never really did drugs, so I'll just say that for the record. But,
noted.
You know, I've done all the silly stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like, you know, when you get to New Year and you just think, actually, I don't need to stand on a bridge anymore. I don't need to be drunk. I don't need to be at a party. I don't need to do that stuff. Actually, what I really like to do is go to bed and wake up at the beginning of the new year and go, yay.
Yeah.
So
I know, even you know that those times have come when midnight suddenly seems really quite late.
Yeah,
like, super late. Do I have to actually see it in, or is it fine if
that's it.
Just acknowledge
just
it'll happen?
Switch off the telly. And I'm very much in that space and I kind of love it.
What's it? So you mentioned that you were worried about what your motherhood would look like because you didn't feel like you had the map that you know, might have otherwise had.
Yeah.
So how did you find that process? Because I'm sure there'll be people listening that are in a similar place.
That was incredibly profound because, yeah, as I said, I didn't feel I had the role model. My mother is very unmaternal. She's not huggy, she's not kissy, she's not loving in that way at all. And yet when my son was born, it was so easy for me to pour my love out and to hug and kiss him and want to protect him and to make him feel kind of wonderful. It caused the massive schism because suddenly I was like, but it's so easy. And whereas before I thought, oh, well, that's just her, you know, different people, you know, people mother differently. And then I saw it only as profoundly negative. I had a very, very loving relationship with my father, though, who was absolutely, it's been like my role model in life. Sadly, he died, I think now 5 years ago. So when he died, the relationship with my mother completely fractured because I had no reason to keep it up anymore. But I was seeing a therapist at that time because that so much was going on. And I needed to be given permission to say, well, you don't have to keep the relationship. So it had always been, the pattern had been something would happen, she'd go off in a strop, I would apologise, no matter whose fault it was, and then we'd carry on as before. And this time something happened that for me really crossed a red line, and I was like, this time she has to come to me. If she could come to me and see just for once that possibly the fault might have been hers, then we've got a chance. And that was 2 years ago. And she's never going to come. And I'm fine with that now because it was costing me so much emotionally to keep trying to make it work and keep thinking, oh, God, I must be a better daughter. Just draw a veil over it, move on, just apologise. And it was like, you know what? This is actually hurting me. And I was so angry about it because you keep swallowing stuff. And it's like we've said, like that's those very strong emotions, they don't go anywhere.
No.
They just sit in you.
Yeah.
And that's what, for me, the Hoffman process got it out. I mean, I had one profound thing after I'd done it where I had a dream where it was literally as if this black sticky stuff was coming out of me.
Wow.
And it was so profound. I mean, so obvious what that was. And it was just like, and then I woke up and was like, okay, that was kind of weird. But I think that was the toxicity, the anger, the holding on to stuff, the being a good daughter. You know, I'm the eldest. You have to be away, the job, everything, the front of everything, holding it all down. And I got to the point where it's like, this will kill me. It has to stop. It has to change. It has to come out. And so that's what I needed to do.
Yeah.
And it's hard because my two sisters retain a relationship, but they have a very different relationship with her. There's quite a big gap between me and my middle sister. And the parenting was very different.
Yeah.
So, but we've managed it between us. I have a beautiful relationship with both my sisters, and that's enough.
Yeah, and I think, I relate to a lot of what you're saying. Actually, it's funny, I was having a conversation just this morning with a really good friend of mine, and we were talking about when a relationship, you've just got to point, I always think of it for me as like the shutters coming down, because, and I also think sometimes you know, it can be a long, complicated relationship, but if you realise you're constantly packing away the same feeling and it's not going to shift, it is okay to give yourself permission to move on. And sometimes that's just what you needed. But I think that addressing of anger is absolutely the thing. And I've seen what happens I have another friend had a very complicated relationship with my parents, and when that parent died, she was sort of left with all this residual anger.
Yes.
And you've just got to find
it's
a space
to go
for that.
Somewhere.
So I complete, you know, that process of the Hoffman or whatever it is people do to to come to terms with that. Whatever works for you is fine, but you have to understand that that's got to go somewhere. It's got to be placed somewhere.
But you also have to own it, because like the obvious way you see that anger come out is on people's nearest and dearest. They strike out or they become really irritable and that thing. But it is also about owning it and understanding it and going, okay, this is kind of my shit that I have to deal with. But then the other thing that always stayed with me that my therapist at the time said is like, now you need to parent yourself. You're so hard on yourself sometimes. Like, be your own parent. Love yourself. Be the person that goes, hey, well done, Michelle. Look at you. Look at what you just did there. You know, the things that you would do, you do automatically for your children. Yeah. And it's like, it was also accepting that, like, oh, you know, like, am I allowed to call myself an orphan at this age? It's like, I've lost both my parents. One, sadly, to cancer. The other one, kind of my own volition. It's like, wow, okay, that was a bit of a head fuck to deal with for a while, until you realise, you know what? You can parent yourself. You're going to be okay. You have loving relationships that are boundaried in a way that is healthy, and you're coming into being fully yourself. And this is part of my story, because for a long time I just felt awful guilt about it. It's like, you're not supposed to do that, are you? I'm allowed to do that. And yet you go, yeah, you can, because you've, Lord knows, you've tried and you've really thought about this. So
do you think maybe this, you know, the developments with, you know, your relationship with your mum, your scrapbooking, your new start with the home, are these all feeling like they're very much happening?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. It's some sort of massive confluence. I mean, the next time you see me, I should probably have dyed my hair purple or something. You know, what's going to be the outward expression of this thing? But no, absolutely. I mean, I think...
If you do dye your hair different, I bet it'll be in matches, a tone that is completely at harmony with your environment.
I'll be in tone with my palette, yeah, won't I? Exactly, yeah. Or chameleonic, and it'll change as I move from room to room, wouldn't it? But no, it's... I just... You know, God, life is a gift, isn't it? It's a privilege. And I feel like I'm finally getting it. Like, I feel like, ooh, I feel I'm almost a grown-up. I'm almost allowed to step into those shoes, because I think for a long time, not that I felt kiddish, but I was like, I wasn't really a grown-up because I didn't have any of those big markers. It's like, well, I got married and that didn't work, so I'm divorced. Oh, I had a child, that's a good one. And then, you know, the house was always a bit kooky, and the job, and I changed stuff. And like, what is my job now when I left the magazine? You know, who am I? But suddenly all these things, well, not suddenly, slowly, these things are coming together. And it's like, oh, actually... I kind of, you know, I've got a weird and windy story. I suppose that's why, in a way, that, you know, when I sometimes get comments on Instagram, when someone will say, like, well, what right have you got to talk about kind of glucose? And you're like, huh? It's like, you don't know anything about me, do you? There is a little bit more than just appears on that show, which I love and is equally a privilege to do. But it's like, I do one TV show. It takes 4 months of my life, on off a week. The rest of my life, most of my time, I'm really very happily occupied doing a lot of other things. So the most recent being like training to be a nutritional advisor, because I just find it so fascinating. And it's the other part of that home health kind of, I was going to say ball, that's not quite the right word, but it's the other part of the pie.
Yeah.
So.
No, but also I think in my experience, the people that can... teach the best or advise, you know, or give the counsel about things that the people have also lived through it. So to be able to say, you know, your environment, you have to be, you know, reflective of your personality, of where you're at in life, of how you're really living, of, as you say, your true self. You have done this process completely. You've lived it. And that's allowed you to be, you know, to give the teachings, because that's how it works, isn't it? When you've had the life experience and now you're in this new home that's going to reflect exactly where you are right now.
Yes, I've done my time
in
the trenches. Although I realise that the new home is step one, because we're renting for a year to just test out the waters, and also because the school change thing is going to happen soon, to sort of from primary to secondary. But and so I was, you know, it was only like week one, and it was like, oh, right, we must action step two, which is to actually find the home that I will then make over. But I think also, to your point, there is something about making a home your own, that it is a statement of identity, isn't it? It is the equivalent of deciding to dye your hair purple. It's like, okay, you're creating a vision of yourself in 3D.
I think it's funny because it wasn't really until I knew we were going to speak today I was thinking about it so much, because I've always enjoyed, even when I lived at home, my mum was really allowed, you know, let me have complete free reign, so I could paint the walls, I could write on them, I did murals.
Write on the walls?
Yeah. Oh. I could do murals, so I would get my paintbrush out. Beautiful. And had pictures on there. And I think it allows you to really, it's like you said, you know, near the beginning, really, when you're talking about within your four walls, you feel held and you kind of know who you are, then when you walk out of the front door, you just feel that little bit more armor, but then you always come back to it.
Yeah.
So I think I did an interview with someone for this, and we went round to her house and she said, oh, I haven't been able to put any of my personality in here. I don't really know exactly how to do that. And the house was very handsome. It was all greys and whites and silvers, but it didn't really have any personality, and it really stayed with me. Mm. So I think people get a bit scared about it, but also you can do it and change it. If you
completely
change, to pick a colour on the walls and you go, actually, no, just change it.
I know, but you're right. People do get really scared. And I would try and say to people, like, if you can get dressed in the morning, you can do your home.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same thing, like, you're wearing a fantastic, like, fuchsia pink top today. It's like, if someone was wearing that, it's like, just try it on a wall. It's like paint, it's like makeup. If you don't like it, you can repaint over it.
Exactly.
But try it, see what it feels like for you. And you know, maybe they think it's more complicated because, like, oh, well, I have to do it like this, or I have to have rules, or there's trends I have to follow. And it's like, there's no shoulds, no haves. It's your home. Do whatever you want. You know, if purple polka dots and, I don't know, fuzzy felt murals is your thing, go for it. Mm. How fantastic would that be? I mean, I think
that actually sounds pretty amazing, a fuzzy felt mural.
But
you could have them where you peel them off.
Exactly.
And change them.
I don't know where that came from, but it's just like, why not? If you know, you
could. You did look a bit shocked when I said I was allowed to wear it on the walls and take
it.
Yeah,
I was thinking that's a step too far for me, for like my son's room. It's like,
really?
no, not on the walls.
What about if you did it really tiny and in pencil?
I'd rather you did it on a piece of paper and then I stick the piece of paper on the wall.
Oh, as I see.
I don't know.
I found a boundary.
Right. There's a boundary. I think it's because, yeah, no, that is because, like, I love collage walls, like with loads of pictures and paintings and stuff and sticking it on. But I think it's because the envelope that I just, yeah, no, God, I wouldn't let him colour on the wall. Maybe I should. Maybe that'll be my...
I think I might have found a little sweet spot for rebellion for the future.
Well, it started here. Oh, my God, yeah.
You can always paint over it.
Well, I know. I should take some of my own advice, shouldn't I?
I've got some kids, one of mine, I won't shame him here, but he's done some graffiti upstairs, which I should take off. It's only in pencil. But he's actually, like, named himself in it. And I'm like, why would you do that? Oh. This could have gone right under the radar and signed it at the bottom.
You're like,
well, obviously,
no,
I know to get cross with. But, I mean, there's squiggles on the wall. It's not really intentional, but, you know, sometimes there's a pen and people get a little bit enthusiastic. It's not, like, I wouldn't say I'm actively, like, here's some felt pens, go crazy. I have tried to explain to the kids that it's possible to make everything look terrible. You know, I could take a hammer and smash that wall. You could reduce this whole room to rubble and dust and it'd be horrible. You have to take an active care in wanting your place to look nice and feel nice and enjoy it. But I also think it's okay sometimes to do something a little expressive, and sometimes
it
works.
I think you're probably right, you know, because I'm thinking of, like, say, the Charleston house where they just painted all door frames and the furniture and everything. So, you
is
know
that
what?
The Bloomsbury set, is
exactly,
that one?
Yes.
Yeah, that's incredible.
But we can't do it in the current house because there's a 35-page, like, inventory
don't do it in a rental.
Like, thing that
unless
came with
really
it, which was
it.
A bit kind of like, oh, I'm sorry, what can I not do?
Oh, that's
but,
intimidating.
But you know what? I think I'm imagining the liberation he'd feel of, I'm like, yeah, go on then, just do it. So, okay, in our new, this will be my deal I shall make with you. When we finally buy the place, it should be in a year, then I'm going to let him colour on the walls. Unless I've already inducted him so much, he'd be like, no, mummy, I cannot do this. You know that would be wrong, but
well,
I don't think he will.
It might be like my eldest boy always wanted to get a tattoo, so I was like, okay, you can. And now he hasn't
because
he knows it's completely fine, so maybe just having the...
Maybe it is about having the permission that then they're like, oh, it's not very rebellious then, is it?
So exactly, it's boring.
If you're like, yeah, fine, go ahead, knock yourself out, just stay off the face.
Yeah, exactly. I've done that, yeah. No face, no hands, come on. Yeah. Neck as well,
come
on.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
But Nah, anyway, it's you're not entered that chapter yet, so I'm going to scare you. Yeah. None of it might happen. And sometimes they really surprise you as well. You think you know where you're headed with it, and then it goes completely different.
But actually is one of the other amazing things about children, isn't it? Like, you start off and, you know, I refuse to read any of the books because I think I started and it was like, oh my God, this is too much. But you think you've got it sorted when you've got a bit of a routine at 3 months, and then 4 months it all changes.
Yeah.
5 months it changes. Six months it changes. And then it keeps doing it like that. So you keep thinking, yeah, totally rocking this. I'm sorted. And it just keeps moving. And you realise, well, that is life.
Exactly.
And it's a huge lesson to learn, isn't it?
It is. And I think that's one of the wonderful things about raising a child, is they're this amazing marker of the passing of time.
Mm.
And, you know, one summer to the next is a different world, a different set of things you're dealing with. And I think that in turn can inform your environment too, can't it? The house
100%.
Shifts and moves. But what are your hopes for the next bit of your life then? What have you got planned at the moment with
Chaps?
I suppose you're teaching and you've got your lovely paints that just come out with your 16 shades, which are beautiful.
Thank you.
What's the company you've done?
It's Graph and Stone. So the key thing about them is that this is paint that cleans your air. It has, look, they can't say it's no VOCs because there's like a trace, tiny. So you open a tin, it doesn't smell. But it not only cleans your air, it will suck the pollutants out of your home. It's the most extraordinary paint.
That's incredible.
The most eco-verified, third-party, peer-reviewed, whatever paint in the world, which is why I wanted to work with them.
That's amazing.
No, it's true. It's what paint should be, to be honest, because most paint is like 37% plastic. It's full of toxins. You know, we used to think that you paint and it would off-gas, so when the smell feels like it's gone, it'll be okay.
Mm.
But it doesn't. Paint off-gases over time. It's one of the most polluting things.
Really?
Yeah, really is. In use, wear and tear, throwing it away at the end of it.
I had no idea. I thought that was gone with the Victorian era, where they used to put
that was lead, I think. Yeah, that was properly kind of like, don't chew on that pencil. But no, it's still, and I think that's what's so alarming, because we think paint's everywhere.
Mm.
It can't be bad, can it? But if there's been a little bit of a theme in anything I've been researching, it is the stuff that's right there that you kind of go, oh, okay, that's not really as clean as I thought it was, or as safe as I thought it was, or just as healthy for us as I thought it was. So it's just about, I want to sort of bring awareness to that and then offer help and just go, look, these are the things you can do. But don't freak out. Some things the horse has bolted, but there are things that you can do. But to your question of my plans, like, I have never, ever, ever been able to do, like, my sister can do a 5-year plan. She knows how she's celebrating her, like, 50th birthday type thing, you know? And it's just extraordinary to me. But I don't know. I'm kind of letting it fold. I need to do some more commercial projects, because I simply do not earn enough money. So, and I'm not going to be able to realise the homestead thing with the space unless I sort that out. So that's the sort of stepping into being a grown-up, I think. So hopefully more collaborations and really trying to extend the message. But my true mission is I love to write. I'm a nerd. I love to do the research. I love to kind of, so learning about paint was like, well, it can't be that bad, can it? And then you look and you start reading and you find the reports, because the reports and the science is actually all out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, most of us were busy. So it's like, well, I can be unbusy at times and I'll do the research. So that's what I've done. And so a lot of that is out through Substack, which I now use as my home for my writing. And so the nutrition course as well. Oh my God, so fascinating. So I literally just put up a post about sugar and glucose, because I was like, why is everyone wearing those monitors?
Yes.
And like, is that good? Is it bad? So I wore one for like a week to research, and I did the research and looked into it all. And I like to share it, just put it out there and go, oh, guess what? Look about this. And I want to continue doing that. I have a second book that will come out. It's been a little bit delayed, but and that one's more of a handbook. So I'm kind of saying to you that there's I have a 4-step mantra where you clear, contain, colour and curate. And then that's applied room by room.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but in each room, I'll give you like, here's the quick thing you can do. Here's a bit more of a moderate thing. And here's a complete overhaul.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sort of game changes in between that. So that's much more that you can pick up and go, right, I need to do something in my bedroom right now. What am I going to do? And the cleanse chapters. Did I say, oh no, I think I might have said that wrong. So clear, cleanse contain and curate. So the cleanse bit is the, like, I need to help you make your home a toxic-free space.
Yeah.
So they're the bits that I get very sort of excited about. So I guess just keep on trucking.
Yeah, I'm not
doing
a big
all that stuff.
5-year plan girl either.
It scares me a bit because it's like, well, I don't know. I might make a beautiful 5-year plan and then change my mind tomorrow.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I think just keep trucking is good enough, isn't
it?
Thank you so much, Michelle.
Oh, and, no, gosh, thank you.
Have to
You've
go and
made
break
this.
The news to your son that he's allowed to draw on the walls. So.
Yeah, I think I'll let you do that. Except, but don't start here. Don't
you
start
can go
here.
Home with a Sharpie. No, I'm just joking.
Oh, God.
I'm only joking. I'm not even going to bring it up. Don't worry.
Oh, but no, thank you. You make chatting. I loved when we worked together on Interior Design Masters because it was just like, we'd like known each other for years or something and we just
definitely.
Sort of clicked in and got chatting, and I found you very, it was very easy to say, actually, Sophie, can I ask your advice about this, that and the other? And it's like, Michelle, you don't really know her very well, so but
fine.
it was lovely.
It felt very natural, and I was actually really, firstly, I was really happy. It was like stepping into a show. I've literally not missed a single episode. But also, I found it just, it's such a privilege to be able to step into these environments and to talk about it. And it's really preaching to the converted because I'm obsessed with looking around me and how things make me feel. But yeah, it was great.
But no, you were so eloquent as well, though. And also, I guess you were right in an area that you absolutely have expertise on, so which is why it was so perfect.
Yeah,
so
you were doing like dressing rooms, weren't
you? Yes. So backstage dressing rooms.
Yeah.
Hey.
Really cool. Ah, lovely.
Ooh,
oh, and there's my cat. Titus, that was right on cue. He's like, ram it up. I'm hungry. And let's go and feed the kids as well. Okay. Thank you so much. Hi, I'm now inside the shoe cupboard. That's what's been happening. While you've been listening to Michelle and I've been clearing out the shoe cupboard and there was so much stuff we were holding on to we didn't need. It's crazy. Pull it out and you're like, I have found 2 rain buggy covers. They're quite bulky, aren't they? Those big rain covers you put on buggies. We don't have a buggy anymore. Didn't need that. I found shoes that no one knew who they were belonged to. They were just like mystery shoes. Richard had bought doubles of things without realising. Anyway, it's been a positive. And I'm going to keep on going. Keep on trucking. Isn't Michelle brilliant? I really appreciate her openness in talking about her complicated relationship with her mum. And I know she is far from alone in finding herself without a map that worked for her when it came to parenting. I've spoken actually to quite a few people on the podcast now where it's maybe made them realise that aspects of their own parent, you know, how they were parented, scared them about how they might replicate it but also want to be part of the change. So yes, I really appreciate her honesty with that. And also I just thought it was so nice to talk to somebody who's taken such an active approach to recognising and working out where she's actually at in life. I just feel like sometimes it's quite easy to let the grass grow a bit fallow and you don't really look at your needs, your lifestyle. And I suppose because she is so in touch with her environment and was starting, you know, afresh with a new home, it makes you really look at the here and now of like, what do I actually want to surround myself with? What do I actually enjoy? What do I actually need? So yeah, all the good stuff has definitely made me think about it for me as well. And so thank you to her. And I'm trying to think next week. I think it's going to be, you know, I never normally like to tell you just in case I change it. But I'm pretty confident that next week it's going to be gorgeous Vicky. Vicky Gill, who does all the clothing for Strictly. And she is such a gorgeous woman and so talented. So she works in costume. She does all of the twinkly, twinkly outfits that you see dancing across the dance floor. That's obviously how I met her. And she's just one of those women, talented, hardworking, and just very low on the ego front. You know, she just does what she does. She loves what she does. But actually, she's incredibly talented. And, well, you're here for yourself. She's just very warm, got a lovely team around her, another good presence in the world. Anyway, I'm going to love you and leave you from the comfort of my little snug. I can actually sit on the floor in here, at least that's the thing. I couldn't even see the floor when I opened up this morning. I'm going to keep going, guys. I'm going to keep deep diving through the horribleness of our shoe cupboard. It's not a very exciting place to be, but it's going to look good when it's done. I hope you have a lovely rest of your day, rest of your week, whatever you're up to. Thank you for coming to find me here. Please continue to give me your suggestions about who I should speak to. And yeah, it's always a pleasure, never a chore, but I'm not sure I can say the same for clearing out the shoe cupboard. All right, take care. See you soon. Bye-bye. Oh, I popped back on because I realised that in all my fussing with recording my intro a couple of times and sorting out piles of unwanted footwear and coats, I've realised I forgot to tell you something. Or maybe I did tell you. I'm going to say it again, or for the first time, depending on what happened the first time around. I am a guest judge on Interior Design Masters, the episode that's just been released in the same week as this podcast is published. So that's episode 7 of the current series, which is, I think, series 5 of Interior Design Masters. It was such a joy to do it. I've never missed an episode. I absolutely love that program. And I got to be guest judge on the week where it was a semi-final. And so 3 designers are changing the interiors of the dressing rooms at Wembley Arena. And it was just, I loved it so much. And I hope you enjoy the series and I hope you enjoyed the show because it was... There's some proper talent in there. Wow. Anyway, yeah, I hopped back on to say that because I couldn't remember if I told you. So if I'm saying it twice, you know it twice. And if it's the first time, thank goodness I got back on here. All right, that's it for me. See you soon, baby.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.